extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Greetings, greetings, and welcome to Extra Time here in Spanish Harlem, uptown, Upper East Side?
Upper East Side.
Yeah. I thought Spanish Harlem starts at 103.
You're a big city guy.
We're on 106. I've never lived in Manhattan, though. Anyway, I'm Matt Doyle, joined by my partners in soccer, Tom Bogert of The Athletic and Jaime Macias. How you boys doing on this fine Saturday afternoon?
We're doing good. I thought so to peek behind the curtain already, I'm supposed to be hosting the show, and the host usually does the intro. But Doyle was like, nah, I got this clear out.
So it was repeatedly said that we would co-host, the three of us.
Yeah, I mean, there's no I in team, but it's just like, there has to be.
There's no I in team. There is a me, though.
Yeah.
And I have seniority.
And so that's what I was going to say. So it's already going well. They're like, hey, Tom, can you host? Yeah, sure. And Doyle's like, nah, I got the intro. I'll do the fun stuff. You get to do all the bad stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't get that question because I'm not a good host.
Yeah, you already capped to that. You said in the pre-show meeting, you're like, I'm a terrible host because I ask and then answer my own questions. David Goss, we have lost. He's parts unknown right now. Andrew Wiebe has called in from the golf course to report he actually shot a 38 on the back nine yesterday, so he's very happy with that. And he's back out golfing again today. We'll get his takes.
What a golf camp.
In a moment. He's got a nice swing. Wiebe does. He really does. Like he
must have a great swing if you're saying that. Like no, there's no way that you'd be like, if it was on the fence, there's no way that you'd
like you could see he grew up playing baseball and golf. And you watch him play soccer and you could see he grew up playing baseball and golf.
Yeah. No, that sounds like a Kansas boy. And look, I need to get this out in the air. I can't be silent any longer. I need to talk about it right now. To the man to my right, Jaime Macias, twice this afternoon. He has went to wipe off his face, and instead of using a tissue or a paper towel or something else, he's used a piece of paper.
Yes.
Jaime, can you defend yourself to this atrocity? What's going on? Is your skin no paper cuts? How are we doing?
How are you doing, my friend?
he's so smooth.
It's a technique for that I get working on air on humid Ecuadorian weather.
Mm.
I don't need to be a paper towel. I need it to like dry, to clean everything that.
And so, a piece of just like plain white paper, you fold it over so you don't get paper cuts. Yeah. I did notice that technique, Tom, as time I was doing this. And that dries you out better. So it takes the sheen, the glow off when
you're on. Especially when you're not wearing makeup.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when you work in humid weather, it's not good to wear makeup either because. It will.
Yeah. It'll run, get into your eyes, make them burn.
The better paper is.
Eyeliner will do that.
The better paper is like from a block, not from a printer or a copy machine. But I'm just three papers away of running out of papers on my blog, and I still have a game to call on Tuesday. So I gotta use the printer one.
All right, there's a tip for anyone who wants to break into TV, because Jaime's been doing it for a long time. We saw him, of course, at Qatar covering the World Cup, correspondent for MLSsoccer.com at that point, and now you can see him every week on League Pass. Let's get into it. League's Cup, the best thing that we have seen over the past couple of days. Tom, we'll start with you because you have the right answer. Tom got into the Google Doc to edit first, so he got the best answer for this.
Tom put together the Google Doc. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure that and I'm going to pull a Wiebe right off the top here and give you two answers, because one, the Real Salt Lake raccoon that fell through the ceiling during their weather delay in a game that didn't happen on Thursday night, that was just incredible. And it's, I don't know, there's so many good things to say about that video of the raccoon. And the club have said that the raccoon was humanely
captured and released in a creek to the west of the stadium, which sounds a little bit like a farm upstate.
But Matt,
the baby raccoon went to live in a farm upstate. Very happy.
We get a live moment of the raccoon. Do you remember?
Yeah.
That we were waiting for to see what happened with the Real Salt Lake game, and we called Donnie. And when we were with Donnie on the phone, knowing what was the news, the raccoon fell down. So
Donnie was giving us a play-by-play of the raccoon tearing through the press.
I was talking with Donnie, and out of a sudden he said, "Hey, a raccoon fell from the floor, from the roof," And he started speaking in Spanish. Cuidado, 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 because the raccoon was running around the press box.
That because raccoons speak Spanish? Is that why he did that? Was he giving it instructions?
No, no. I think he was giving instructions to the people around not to be aware of the raccoon.
RSL have some experience with this. Remember, the cat ran onto the field. Was that a CCL game?
Yeah.
That was a CCL game. And then they also had ducks, the RSL ducks against. That was a CCL game as well. I think that was against Monterey back about 5 years ago. I could be wrong about that. Please correct me at Anders at the extra time thing. So obviously the raccoon stole the show. RSL would steal the show one night later. Please continue, Tom.
Yeah, Nahuel Guzman, the Tigres goalkeeper, who is an incredible character. For those who know his work with Tigres, his work at the MLS skills competition a couple years ago, faking a cramp when Ricardo Pepi was getting cooking.
That's right.
They went into penalties against Vancouver Whitecaps, and he's just a showman. He's incredible. He was miming like left and right to try to put off the shooters. And then at one point he did a magic trick of hiding something.
He had like a Joe Bluth style, like, illusion magic trick happening, like close-up magic.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
It's the cool. There's the most, like, I had so many questions when I was watching the video. I was like, is this real? Is this a bit? How did this happen? How did he get all of the rope into his mouth? Like, looks like he blew his nose and then just took, you know, 7 yards.
So Tom is actually really impressed.
I was,
like,
yeah,
children's,
I was like,
magic tricks is what we learned.
This is legendary. This segment.
There is a video on Twitter. I think that it's when Tigres is going to kick their last penalty, you can see Nahuel in the corner of the box, right? And he's putting in his mouth like a roll. I don't know. I don't know if that is paper, like for the kids' parties, or it's plastic, right?
And I have so many follow-up questions, and I hope at The Athletic we do a deep dive on this, because...
Oh, Pablo's already there.
Yeah, right? And I was thinking, he's probably busy with the raccoon stuff, so I think maybe it'll be Felipe Cardenas. But so many... Did he go... If we go into a penalty shootout, assistant coach... Can you hold this for me? Or did he put it in his bag? Did he tell anybody? Where do you buy something like this?
He strikes me, like, Nahuel's been there for so long.
He has a magic room in his house?
So much, for sure.
Yeah.
And he's won so much, like, he has license to do whatever he wants.
So,
right? Like he's a pillar of the success that Tigres have had over the course of the past decade. And obviously, they won this game as well. So they're into the round of 16 in Clásico Regio coming up.
So when they play Monterey next round, if they go into a penalty shootout again, does he bring out a deck of cards and says,
I hope so.
Hey, is this your card? As the player's putting the ball down. Would that be illegal? Do you get a yellow card for that? Like, can we find it in the rules?
There was an interview in Argentina for Tutibo Martinez, right, this week. And he was like, I'm so happy about the Debo rule. Like, the impact that his penalty shootout against France meant and changed the rules, right? But Nahuel didn't do anything that is not allowed in those rules, right?
Right.
You gotta change them again, right? You cannot talk to the kicker. You cannot move from the line. You cannot touch the crossbar. No rules about magic.
They didn't need magic to get through. Tigres won on penalties, against Vancouver. I guess it did need a little bit of magic. Gignac with that bicycle kick for the equalizer. We have to give Vancouver a lot of credit, because I think we all agree that Tigres are one of the three best teams in this competition. Now probably the best team in this competition, given the injuries that we've seen to Monterey and Club America. But they weren't dominant. They did just enough to get through, which I guess is kind of their MO in knockout rounds, isn't it?
If we resume Tigres the last decade, they're winners.
Yeah.
They can win by a set piece. They can erase you from the field. They can dominate. They can counterattack. Like, that's a team that has a lot of ways to win, and that's always a dangerous team. And then in a part, I'm sad of seeing Vancouver go, because I think that's one of the MLS teams that don't receive enough credit, including the regular season. What Vanni Sartini have put together in this year and a half that he has been in charge, that team is a reflection of what his manager wants. And that's sometimes the hardest part of a manager, because every manager is very good on the board, but translating that to the field, being able that 11 that he selects plays exactly as he wants is a tough part. And that Vancouver, it's a recognizable team with a clear identity and with a lot of different pieces and tactics every game that you cannot prepare for them, and that's how the first goal arrived, for example.
Yeah, Wonder Strike by Pedro Vieira. And I push back a little. Like, I'm a big fan of Vanni Sartini, particularly his man management, and I think that's much more important than the tactics in the grand scheme of things. But like, they are in seventh in MLS this year. They didn't make the playoffs last year, and part of that was because the first half of the season they changed tactics and formations and personnel every single week, so they didn't have any continuity.
And we're actually seeing a change now, right? Yeah. They've gone to three at the back. They've been more 4-3-2-1 throughout this season. Yeah. So I think he has ideas, but he does like to mess around.
Yeah. And again, they have been a very good story, but it's just like, I don't want to like get carried away as if they're first in the West.
I think that there are managers that are better with a specific game plan, mm-hmm. and there are managers that are better with a continuity. And for example, we're going to get into them later, right? But you see Philly, right? Philly, on terms of consistency, they have been the best team in MLS in the last 5 seasons. Mm-hmm. But when they try to do something a little bit different, the team is not there. Like, everything that is not been extremely consistent takes them away from the game. And then you get this Vancouver. That Vancouver is a team that will play you very good individual games, right? There's game plan against Tigres was a game plan that was going to take them closer to beat them. The game plan they play against Galaxy, the game plan they put against LAFC in the last MLS regular season game they played. So it's more like, how do you plan your season? How do you manage your team? And there are managers that plan their team like with what they have and how to take the most advantage of them. Philly, for example, and other ones that says like, okay, no, how we are going to overcome the opponent on a better way. And I think that Sartini is more in that kind. And even though some games you're going to have a master plan and you're going to get performance, there are going to be days where the team is not going to be able to compete.
Well, one of these two teams got the MLS Cup last year and the other one missed the playoffs. So that's what I'm going to end with this. And we're getting off topic anyway, because we're going to talk more about both of these teams later in the show. But just to wrap this one up, Tigres are playing against Monterrey in the round of 16 of the League's Cup. And Monterrey have bad injury news with leading scorer Bertame out for the tournament with a fractured ankle. It looked like a very bad injury. Hopefully that'll be as quick a recovery as possible. But that kind of colors who, again, Doyle, you were saying this, that I think Monterrey would have been the favorite.
Yeah, not for his injury. I agree. And it's not just Bertame. It's Aguirre.
Yeah,
he's out as well. And the other thing about Monterrey, who have, like Tigres and Club America, the biggest checkbooks in the region, they don't have the consistency. Jaime and I were talking about this on the match preview you can watch on Season Pass.
Good plug.
Yeah, right? You see this Tigres lineup, and it's Gignac, and it's Nahuel, and it's, Guido Pizarro is still out there. Like, you recognize this team, and you know that because of this consistency, you have pretty a good idea of what you're going to get. And they have gotten to this point in the knockout rounds without getting out of third gear. Monterrey, they have so many new faces. They've had to pretty consistently try to create different partnerships up top, different partnerships in central midfield. It's left them, I think, a little bit more vulnerable. Look, when these two teams meet in international play, Monterrey always figure out a way to win, always. But I do think you're right. I think Tigres are the favorites in this one now. I'm going to move us along, because we're 10 minutes in. The best thing I saw over the past couple of days is the Bongi show. Bongi Longwane, a guy who has been fun since day one upon his arrival into MLS, and who the underlying numbers have really liked for a long time, because if you watch him play, you see he's a winger who gets into goal scoring positions. Like Diego Rossi is a good comparison. The new man signed for the Columbus Crew that we'll be talking about in a little bit. Bongi has consistently gotten into good spots, has not consistently put the ball in the back of the net. That is changing during League's Cup. He is, as we record this, he is the golden boot leader for League's Cup with 6 goals in 3 games. He had a couple more in Minnesota's penalty shootout win over Columbus, which was, I think, a pretty big upset. It is a victory for the XG nerds to see Bongi, coming good on his underlying numbers. And he will probably need to score more, because they're facing now Toluca, who the highest score, 12 goals so far in the tournament for Toluca. A lot of fun with their new partnership up top, Robert Morales and
Rodrigo de Po.
There
Pedro Raul.
Pedro Raul. They have been fantastic. This game, it feels like this is going to be another 4-3 game, doesn't it?
I mean, what do you think? What is this Toluca team the favorites going in against Minnesota?
I think it's a very even one. I think it's a very even one because Toluca is not solid defensively, and we get to this point previous to the Kansas game with Toluca scoring a lot of goals but conceding a lot of goals. I think that the exception of the rule was Kansas,
yeah.
And it has like his the game has those details. Like if that Fontas goal went up just on the closing stages of the first half, it will be 2-1 and it will be a different game if Don plays soccer, right? But it's not like they absolutely didn't give Kansas a chance to get into the game, and Minnesota is also very powerful offensively. So I think that even though it's a favorite, it's not going to be like a completely outscore game for the Mexican team.
Yeah, and just kind of going back to Minnesota a little bit, like Bongi is the kind of perfect type of player to put around Emmanuel Reynoso. So
yep.
Timu Pukki hasn't really hit his form, but again, it's a reliable goal scorer. Like the attack for the first time in a long time makes a lot of sense.
Honestly, for the first time since that 2020 playoff run, right when it was Reynoso just showed up and started like teeing up Kevin Molino.
Yeah.
But it's that movement of the guys around Reynoso mm-hmm. that has opened stuff up, and I think it's also allowed Minnesota, and this is weird to say after a 3-3 game, but it's allowed them to be a little bit more solid defensively because over the past couple of years, they've had to throw their fullbacks forward in order to get consistent production in the attacking third. They're not having to do that as much anymore. Part of it, though, is I think teams have been naive. I think teams have allowed them to play in transition a little mm-hmm. bit more. And Reynoso, if he gets space in transition, just make a run. Just make a run, and you're gonna get the ball in a good spot, and you're going to put the ball in the back of the net.
Yeah, that game, they tied Columbus 3-3. They beat him in penalties. The last 10 minutes of that game was some of the most fun I've seen.
Yeah, like, it was MLS unreal. After dark, for sure.
Molino had a couple really good chances. Minnesota tied the game initially in extra time, and then And then Molino had a couple chances, but it was really like it wasn't playing for penalties on either side, which I really appreciated. Both teams are really going for it, and that was, again, some of the most fun I've had. So moving on, Jaime, what was the best thing that you've seen over the last few days?
That more runner-up teams qualified to the next stage and group winner teams.
So there is, what we did the math, there was eight out of the 14 teams that played in the group stage.
Yes, because we're taking away Pachuca and LAFC. Yeah. So 8 out of 14 runner-ups qualified for the next stage.
Thrilling stuff, yeah. Jaime.
There was no way, for example, and it's more. It's a bigger number because there's no chance of a runner-up team to qualify in the Miami-Orlando game, right? Both wins.
That was what I was thinking about in that game and not Lionel Messi versus Felipe Martins. So that probably is more of a moment than the Nahuel stuff. That was probably more of a moment than the great Bongi goals, right? That's probably what we think.
No, and look, I think that for a lot of people, group stage was so fast that it doesn't count winning or finishing second. But all those second-place teams, with the exception of America...
Mm-hmm.
They were playing away, right? Well, America was playing away so everybody was playing away. There was not like a home field advantage, so it technically makes a difference, right? Especially in the MLS versus MLS tides
that's fair.
They were playing away.
Speaking of a second place team that got through, Club America, they beat the Chicago Fire 1-0. It was not as convincing as Club America looked early in the group stage when they throttled St. Louis City, then they got throttled by Columbus, and then this game, Chicago hung around. They played very well, but Club America get by 1-0. Doy, what'd you think of that game?
Chicago hung around, played very well. Club America got by 1-0. Look, Club America, among the favorites in CONCACAF in any competition mm-hmm. they enter, but we talked about this, Jaime, the loss of Henry Martin. He is their focal point as a number nine, and even when he's not scoring goals, he's occupying the center backs, and that allows those two dynamic wingers, Quiñones on one side and Suarez on the other, to be so good. They lose balance without Martin, and we saw it in this game because Quiñones had to play as the center forward. Same thing against the Crew, by the way. They kind of rotated the squad, and Quiñones drifts wide right? So they create overloads, but then they don't have the runners in the box that they need to be the Club America that we all thought would win. I mean, win this thing.
Yeah, they didn't suffer the game on the, not on the chances that Chicago create, but in the control of the game as they suffered in Columbus. Jonathan Dos Santos was back on the squad.
Yeah,
he gave them a lot of solid control of that middle part of the pitch. But part of the goal, right, with a manager is when you see the stats of the game, that stats gotta be reflected on the pitch. And when we see the stats of that game, it was completely dominance by America. Mm-hmm. But when you see the game itself, it doesn't show that way. And it was like the possession, the chances created, the part of the pitch where they played the game. But Brady didn't have that amount of work during the game. And as you were saying, America does not have a natural replacement for Henry Martin.
Yeah.
They don't have another number nine. So they're going to need to play basically what's coming through the tournament with a false number nine, mm-hmm. or a guy that plays as a number nine that does not fill the position itself.
Yeah, well, when this attack is cooking again, when they're natural, like when Julian Quiñones on the wing is somebody who is really impressive to me, he's a guy that I've been very disappointed that an MLS team hasn't gotten a deal for, mm-hmm. because this has been on the table for, like, it's been a real possibility, both in terms of finances and pedigree. Like,
As soon as Atlas won that first title a couple of years ago.
An MLS team absolutely could have made him a DP, and he's kind of showing that, like, I think he would be really, really awesome in this league, and he's really awesome for Club America. So, like, that's kind of a guy that I keep finding myself looking, like, oh, in different circumstances. Like, Chicago, they bought Jairo Torres.
Right.
Maybe they could have bought Julian Quiñones, and maybe things would have been a little different. So Club America are playing against Nashville SC Tuesday at 8 p.m. We're talking about...
I want everybody to notice that Tom has just ripped the wheel out of my hands.
You called the audible right before.
That's fine.
I don't know.
No, you're doing great.
It sounds like you think
that. You know
that.
What? When we were doing the previews, the match previews this morning, Tom was the one who was hosting them. You're kind of a natural at it. You're very good at it. I was surprised. I expected you to stumble over your words more. You had a...
That's how he does compliments to me, by the way.
You had it.
My expectations were so low. You were okay, man. I'm proud of you.
You had a tough start, right? Like,
I didn't know what to do with my hands.
You did. Yeah, you didn't know what to do. So you just stood there kind of like a penguin. It was very strange. But we got through that first one. That's the Charlotte-Houston one. So keep an eye on that one. But then you improved rapidly.
How about you watch the better ones? So, Doyle, am I allowed to ask you a question?
I got my permission to ask you a question.
What do you think about the host now. What do you think about?
You're the captain now.
What do you think about National Club America?
Yeah, it's actually a really good question, Tom. Great work. We've seen four different formations in three games, or three different formations in four games. Three different formations in three games. I'm very bad at math.
There we go.
From Gary Smith. It was a 4-2-3-1 in the first game. It was a 4-4-2 diamond, which I think is their default formation in the second game. And then it was a 3-5-2 in this most recent game from Nashville. I don't think we'll see a repeat of the 3-5-2. I think that was more about kind of mirroring Cincinnati's lineup and Cincinnati play with two true forwards. Putting three center backs out there makes sense. So you have the spare man. I think it'll be back to the 4-4-2 diamond, especially because again, there's no true number nine for this Club America team. So I think that the bigger question is, okay, Nashville going forward, they've had some good moments in this tournament, but Hani Mukhtar, one goal in 10 games. Sam Surge, their new DP center forward, sitting on the sideline. Presumably, we will get a chance to see him in this game because they need a little help in the final third, and they just went out and spent a lot of money to try to get that help.
It's a coincidence that the Mukhtar numbers came down when they sold CJ Sapong.
Yeah. I mean, CJ doesn't score a ton of goals, but he does a ton of work to make it easier on the guys around him.
Because Mukhtar is not a nine. Like,
no.
He plays behind the nine, and he ends up in a scoring position. It's like Drewsy, for example, in Austin. Mm-hmm. Like, are guys that start to play behind the nine and finish in front of the nine. And they need that nine, good or bad, to anchor center backs, to distract defenders. And these last couple of games, Nashville have not play with Bombori as starting player. And you see how the numbers of Mukhtar comes down when he does not have that reference point, open the road for him. And probably now that they are gonna go back to the back four, that extra guy is gonna be replaced by a forward. I don't know. But this underdog position,
it suits them.
And you know, there is an interesting thing here, and it's like a big topic. And MLS teams, I used to play against MLS teams, and they know each other. They have a lot of things in common because that happens in every country. Teams from the same country, they have a lot of things in common, and common ways to overcome them. So, for example, what Charlotte does, it's very hard for them to make a difference in MLS with that system. When they get it right, they get it right, but it's more none than often. But when they try to do that against a team like Cruz Azul, they make them look bad.
Yeah.
And
to be fair, Cruz Azul makes Cruz Azul look bad these days.
Yeah, also, right? Yeah. But that way of trying to dominate the game from the middle, it's going to make Cruz Azul look bad. And probably it's not going to look Philly or the Red Bulls look bad.
Right.
What Nashville does is probably make them struggle in some top games in MLS. Like the same Philly, for example, the same Cincinnati, for example, in league home and away games. But in this knockout stage, it proved right. And probably it's kind of a similar game with a different system that we're going to see America. What they do the best, it's going to make America struggle.
That is the Gary Smith way. Yeah, from day one in MLS, he has been a coach who has had a defensive-minded team and has been about making it difficult on other teams. Even without Henry Martin, right? Club America have not looked great for the past two games. They're still favorites. We all agree that Club America are still favorites going into this. And are we all picking them to go through?
I'm going to go with Nashville because, I don't know, they're very alluring to me in knockout kind of stages. And again, if Sam Surridge can, he probably won't start, but if we can see what he and Hani Mukhtar look like, and again, I think Hame's points were all really good. Hani's at his best when there's more of like a target nine next to him.
100%.
So like, and this is a game where you can absolutely see Club America kind of maybe not dominating the ball, but like, I think Hani Mukhtar is going to have plenty of chances.
It wouldn't shock me if Club America had 60-65% of the ball, but Nashville had the three best chances.
Exactly. Yeah. So like, I think Hani's going to get a lot of chances in transition, and that could suit.
I think that's, for me, that's a game, right? And we're not predicting who's going to go through, but that's going to be the game. I think that it's statistically, America is going to dominate the numbers, but they're not going to get as many clear chances as Nashville. Is Nashville going to be able to score in those three extremely clear chances they're going to get? Or is America being able to score with those 20 good opportunities?
Right.
You know what?
They're already out.
That's a game.
The question is, will they actually be good? I think there'll be good possession, but I don't think that Nashville will allow very many clear-cut opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is Justin. Andrew Wiebe is not on the golf course. He's at the beach. That's
Without
the
me.
Life that he's leading. He's at the beach with his kids. He's having a nice time with the family, but he's always working. Always working. And so Andrew wants the world to know that the best thing he saw the past couple days in Leagues Cup was Felipe Martins coming in at the end of that Clásico del Sol. I'm officially buying that as the rivalry name between Orlando and Miami, and immediately trash talking Messi. And we knew it. Like as soon as we saw that in the group chat, we're like, Felipe's coming in.
Get Messi off the field.
Literally, I forgot who said it. Like, get Messi off the field. But yeah, that was a very, you knew it was going. If you're an MLS sicko, you knew that moment was coming. Mm-hmm. It did. Messi handled it. He has been trash talked before.
Yeah,
it seemed. And Inter Miami, 3-1 winners over Orlando City. I thought Orlando acquitted themselves well.
Yeah.
They were not intimidated. They were not particularly great on the day, but Messi was, and Robert Taylor was. What a pass on that first goal. In Miami, just absolutely looking the part already.
Yeah, one thing for me from this game is that Orlando were up for the fight, and that goes a long way, and that's not surprising for where Orlando was. And I, like, again, Cesar Rajo fouled Messi, and Messi got under his skin a little bit, and they went into the locker room jawing at each other. And it looks like a lot of that was led by Messi. So, like, Messi was also up for the fight. But again, like, that was it, they made the game more uncomfortable for Messi. There is no breaking news. There is no plan to stop Lionel Messi. You can try to do whatever you want. I think that
you can hope he takes a Tom Bogert touch in the middle of the field and then gets a yellow.
Somebody.
No, there is a plan to stop Messi. The problem is that if you put that plan in practice, you don't have players to cover the other three guys.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened on that first goal. Like, there are six Orlando players referencing Messi. And Busquets didn't play Messi, played Kremaski, and Kremaski and Taylor were way open. And when they figured out that Messi was not receiving the ball and tried to reference what was happening, well, then is when Messi was receiving the ball absolutely alone in the box.
Yeah, and that's what, like, Messi is the greatest dribbler we've ever seen. He's the greatest passer of the ball that we've ever seen. He has gifts as a soccer player that no matter who you are not going to be able to match. But what you can do is learn from his intelligence. He's always checking his shoulders. He's always finding space. And then when there is a chance to make a direct run straight into the six-yard box, when he recognizes that the defense has been scrambled, he goes.
Yeah.
And this is simple, fundamental stuff.
Yeah, and people can debate. For me, Messi is the greatest in history, right? But that's open for debate. I think that...
I don't think it is.
He's the smartest in history. That's not open for debate.
Yeah.
Because you said he's a great dribbler, but the times go by, the more he dribbles without the ball.
Yeah.
you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I do.
No, I don't.
How can I, like, you got to be very smart, extremely smart, to be always covered by 5 to 6 players and appear alone.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean, dribble without the ball.
That was beautiful right there.
Yeah, it is.
That was beautiful.
We need Tom to read a little bit more philosophy. He would have gotten that. A little more poetry.
Imagine me trying to do that in my
You have no language. Philosophy or poetry in your game.
I think
at
I could
time.
Do that in my only language, let alone if I learned a secondary language. That was beautiful.
I'm going to do it in Spanish either.
I think that we need to point out and discuss right now that the game was 1-1, and let's be kind and say a very questionable penalty call.
Yeah, I thought it was soft.
I thought it wasn't a penalty at all, really. So that, again, moments change games, goals change games. Who knows what might have happened outside of that? But again, like, it was 1-1, and
it was a level game. It was a level game. I think Orlando was better before the 1-0. I think that the game then leveled up. I really like that guys that have been cross path with Messi before, they're not afraid of him. They don't have this admiration on, oh, we're playing against Messi. It's like, oh, we're playing against Messi. Now he's going to see what we're capable of. Like, Cartagena had faced him a couple of times. Mm-hmm. They know each other. Araujo knows what Messi... And that's a game you got to play against the best in the world. Respect.
Yeah.
The history. Respect the trajectory. But play your game. Like, I don't think nobody in Orlando did anything outside the rule book against Messi. They just did their job at the maximum of their capacity. And that's why the game was so good. Going back to the penalty, sorry that I went sideways there. I see an angle on why he called it.
Yeah, I understand.
The problem is that sometimes referees are tied on the VAR, and it's good to be tied in that area, even though we're going to disagree in certain situations. When you see the run of Martinez going behind the defender, it looks like the defender grabs him and throws him. The first shot it took, it looks like that. So it's correct for him to call the penalty. And when you see the replay, in the conclusion on the replay is not that he never grabs him. It's that he didn't grab him strong enough for him to fall.
Mm.
And that's the gray area on the VAR. Like,
yeah,
he calls a penalty. VAR asked the referee, what do you call? Grab him when he was running to the area. And the grabbing exists.
Yeah. And that's what we have learned over the years with VARs. Like, if there is contact, then the call on the field is going to stand.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, the VAR cannot go on, no, but yeah, he grabs him, but he was not strong enough. No. Like, they just got to confirm that what he saw actually happened. The only way that penalty was not going to be called is that the VAR said, no, he never touched it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. So,
by the way, Messi and Joseph must be best friends already, because Messi letting Joseph take the penalty.
I think this is really good groundwork, legwork by Joseph Martinez. He started with the first training session, buddy, like buddy with Lionel Messi. Everybody should be doing this. I'd be doing this too. It's a little job security, because if by the end of the season, when Joseph, there's a contract option for Miami, if Messi says, "Hey man, I really like this. This guy fits with us,"
and gonna make him hard. To be clear, Joseph is fitting with Messi really well. Yes. And I had my doubts at the start, because I thought Joseph was dropping in too much, but we've seen now. I don't want to say a different side of Joseph, where he's much better combining in small areas than I think he was given credit for, because we always think of him as a goal scorer first, last, always.
And like explosive in transition.
Right, getting out. Like, think about how those great Atlanta teams played. He was always out on the run. Mm-hmm. There hasn't been as much of that from him, but there has been stuff like the assist that he picks up on the third goal, which is like Joseph, dummying in the box or giving up an open shot to give Messi a tap in. Like, that's just good cerebral play from him. The other thing that's happened is with Joseph dropping in and obviously Messi pinching in from the right side, asking a ton from DeAndre Yedlin to provide width and penetration up the right. He has been fantastic at that. And then Robert Taylor, the other big story at left wing. This guy has been incredible for three games now. And perfect balance with Joseph and Messi. And he said it after, I think, the interview after the Atlanta game. They're like, what is it working right? He's like, as soon as Messi gets the ball, three of us run. We just run. Because, if you run, you will get the pass. And it's like, that's a really good game plan. It's working great. It's worked great for 17 years, 18 years at the top flight in, two different countries. And now it's working here in the U.S. as well. I think Miami are the favorites to come out of that part of the bracket, right? At this point, it's Houston and Charlotte, and they face Dallas.
Miami play Dallas, at Dallas. So Lionel Messi's first away game since coming to Miami. It's 9:30 Eastern on Sunday, so 8:30 Central local time. It's going to be like 103 degrees on Sunday. We'll see what it is at kickoff. That's going to be pretty miserable. But
I want to add something on the Messi-Joseph. In every job you do in life, you gotta
more
feel
philosophy.
We're getting the philosophy. More
in awesome. any job you do in life, you gotta feel that you are learning from somebody. That's the way to improve. And I think that after those great successful years from Joseph in Atlanta, he was more the guy to learn from than he being able the guy to learn from somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And when he moved to Miami, it was kind of the same. Like, Joseph was the player with the best CV in Inter Miami before Messi arrived. Mm-hmm. And he was kind of stuck in this situation. And I feel like Messi coming, and probably what he didn't need Messi, probably he needed whoever else, like somebody to look up and to improve. Because the hardest part for a player in specific positions, especially at forward, when ages goes by, when you get injured, and some of the little things that you make different, like that explosion that Joseph had before the knee injury, he never recovered, and he still is not getting it back, and he's never going to get it back. But how do I adapt my game with this little less physical quality or physical strength that I have? And that's Messi, because Messi has evolved tremendously. The Messi today, the Messi World Cup champion, is not the Messi of Barca.
Right.
It's a different player, right? And I think that that's something that Joseph has found, because Joseph, it's making smart runs, smart decisions, decisions that are not only based on his physical power of making runs. Like the second goal, the second Messi goal.
Mm-hmm.
That's an assist based on experience, on reading the game, on reading what's happening around, and making the best decision possible. And I think that that's key on how Joseph is
so
performing
then,
now.
So then who does Messi learn from? I think you think he reads the Armchair Analyst?
No.
Like that's what he's like. He goes to MLSsoccer.com, pick up some tips.
He wants to know what Dallas do tactically.
No, look, Messi learns from himself. because he's the best. And you know what, Matt? PSG Messi is way better than Barcelona Messi. And I tell you why.
Oh, I disagree, but go ahead.
I'm tell you why.
Strongly disagree.
Because Messi developed at Barca, playing a system, playing a way in a certain environment, and he was the best at it. It was different players, same environment, same system, same way of playing, same way of performing. And Messi, at that time, with that team, he dominated the world and he won everything. And Messi still struggled to adapt because he had never been exposed to that situation. And that's why we see a different Messi from Barca to national team. Mm. When he's forced out, because he's forced out from Barcelona, he needs to move to Paris. Climate, family, language, league, all the difference. He proved us that at 33, he is able to be better. Because that same player that showed us what he is able to do with the ball, it's also adapting to different contexts, different environments. They're more in the head than in the talent. And that's why we saw the best Messi with Argentina after that transition. That's why I think PSG Messi is better than Barca Messi.
I'm going to respectfully disagree.
And I think we would have seen the best version of Messi if Gonzalo Higuain scored a couple goals.
Yeah.
No.
I think.
No, because I don't think that what happened after will happen.
So, well, we're
anyway.
But you like
relitigating a hypothetical.
You like it. We have the YouTube title for this. Video for this episode.
Just remember, if Angel Di Maria had stayed healthy for any of the finals from 14, 15, or 16, Argentina would have won at least one of those. And of course, who scored the first goal in the World Cup final is Angel Di Maria. So I think, yeah.
Or if Robert Taylor was Argentine, they would have won everything. So yeah, that's Miami against Dallas Sunday night, 9:30. And Doyle teed a question up of who the favorites are to get kind of out of that little mini region. On this half of the bracket to get to the final, Miami are viewed as possibly the favorite, or the Philadelphia Union. Hi, mate. Tell me who you think the favorite is on this side of the bracket.
From all the east-south?
Yes.
Philadelphia or Miami is what I'm going for. What do you pick?
East-south. Yeah, no, I think Philadelphia is still the best team.
Jaime's teaching you philosophy, and he's teaching you geography.
East-south, that indicates... Show. East-south indicates quadrants.
Yeah.
I'm talking about...
The east and south parts of the bracket.
Yeah. East and south on one side of the bracket.
Who's making the final? Philly or Miami?
West and central. I don't know why we don't have a north, but I think it should be north and west.
I'm going to ask why am I yelling.
I think Philly's the best team. Like, Miami had just played the best team they are going to face until they get to the semifinals. If they get to the semifinals, which is Orlando. I think Orlando is a better team than Dallas and than any of the other teams that Miami play and that could play on their way to a possible semifinal. Now we got to talk about playing away, the heat in Texas and all that stuff. But just on terms of quality of the team they're facing, Orlando was the best team they were going to face in a possible path to the semifinals. And I think that Philly is still the favorite because this tournament, every knockout stage tournament, it's not how you started. It's how you evolve through the tournament. And that's why I think that Philly has the players, the quality and the coach to keep improving game by day. And probably this contradictory people is going to say, like, they just draw with DC United. Yeah, but that game is over. There's another game coming.
So the Philadelphia Union, they steamed through the group stage with two big wins against the Gameki's teams. They got through to this round after a 0-0 draw against DC United, won in penalties.
Skin of their teeth.
Yeah, man. Skin of their teeth. They weren't, like, DC were probably the better team on the day. And now Philadelphia hosts the New York Red Bulls Monday night, 7:30 p.m. Zoe, what do you make of that game?
We've seen this game 1,000 times over the last few years. You know it's going to be car crashes in midfield and all over the field because it's just how Red Bulls play. And it's honestly Philly play a lot like that as well.
Yeah.
The more interesting part of it to me is can Philly kind of weaponize their width, right? Mm-hmm. And they struggled with that against DC United. Philly playing a 3-5-2 these days, two true wing backs in Mbaizo on one side, or Harriel sometimes on one side, and then Kai Wagner on the other. And those guys weren't able to get forward and support that three-headed monster of an attack. And when that happens, things can kind of dry up. Now, DC also plays with wing backs. They also play three true defenders. They had two defensive midfielders out there, and they all played really, really well. The Red Bulls are different. Red Bulls play a 4-2-2-2. It's narrow. Like, the whole thing is, like, cut the field in half and try to, you know, funnel play down one side, win the ball compactly, then explode into space. They do that very well. What they don't do is, like, the final ball's not there. They don't score goals. They didn't score from open play against NYCFC. They advanced on an Omer Fernandez well-taken penalty. I did think that that the Red Bulls were the better team in this one, but they're never going to dominate.
I imagine a game like the playoffs on
2020 and 2021, the Red Bulls.
Yeah. 20 Philly, was, yeah, that I was crazy. That was 4-3. That was incredible game.
Yeah, but so Philly have eliminated the Red Bulls in two of the last three years in the postseason, so maybe the Red Bulls have a chance at revenge here.
Yeah, but that's something a lot of teams have done in postseason.
It's an annual tradition. Somebody eliminates the Red Bulls in the postseason. No, this will be good. It's like, it does come down to, like, can Philadelphia get those wing backs forward and involved? And if they do, I like their chances. If they don't, it might go to penalties again.
And I was having a discussion with Anders yesterday, and was like, when you see a back three with a 10, like, the configuration looks weird, right? And Anders said, but that's how Cincinnati plays. And, like, yeah, sure. We get to the point that they don't have fullbacks in those wing positions. What I mean is, like, when Cincinnati do the system, they bring their wingers to make the long runs, right?
Right.
When Philly does the system, they pull their fullbacks on the wing position, and the team does not perform very well in that area. So, like, I think they're trying to find what's the next step of their diamond when Bedoya is not in.
Yeah, and that's it. Because Bedoya is the one who provides some verticality out of midfield when they play a diamond. Obviously, Jack McGlynn's very good, but he's a much different type of player. Bueno's a different type of player as well. Leon Flock seems to have maybe lost his spot a little bit. So there is a little... And the other thing is, both Carranza and Ura are very good forwards. I think Carranza's borderline great forward in this league. But none of them are going to drop... Neither of them is going to drop in and be a secondary playmaker. Mm-hmm. Or even a real true hold-up guy, whereas Cincinnati, and we're talking about a team that just got eliminated, but still Cincinnati, they have in Vasquez, like, a true target forward who will play with back to goal, and that will allow Acosta to do some more off-ball running, and Bupuenza as well is a different type of forward. It's going to be an ugly game. It's going to
end. No.
It's strong,
beautiful.
North Jersey versus Philly suburb energy. There's going to be a lot of duels, a lot of battles.
It's going to be a beautiful game, man. It's going to be a beautiful game. It's going to be a classic knockout stage game.
I appreciate your optimism.
No, there's going to be fighting for every ball. There's going to be a lot of air balls and people fighting for divided tackles.
I mean, the question is, who's going to win the rebounding?
Get out the glass. I think that's enough there. One more game to get into before we talk about the end of the transfer window here. LAFC.
I feel like we skipped over Dallas. Like, we have to, like, Dallas is not going to be a pushover for Miami. Like, we didn't even touch on them. They seem to have found something with Eugene Ansah, right? And it comes back to balance a little bit in that attack, and they were lacking it because when Velasco was playing on the wing and Jesus Ferreira as the number nine, both guys came back and they weren't creating verticality. Marco Farfán's a very good, solid left back, but he's not a guy who's going to get into the attack and add much there. So Ansah has come off the bench these last two games, and he's really smart. It's a small sample size, so maybe this will end up being wrong, but, like, he appears to be really smart about using the space and the running opportunities that other guys create. And that's allowed him to drift off the back post, be super dangerous. His timing on his box arriving is really, really good. And suddenly Dallas are getting goals from a spot where they haven't gotten much the past couple of years. So I do think Inter Miami are favorites in this game. I do expect them to go through. But Dallas are not going to be a pushover, and I wouldn't be shocked if this ended up being 3-2 to FC Dallas, just because I think they're more dangerous now. Velasco being in central midfield, that's another one as well. He's I think he looks a little more comfortable there.
I agree.
And is like more of a true playmaker than they've had.
I don't know if you agree, Matt, but when we compare teams with last season, right, what they were doing good and why they're performing, even though Dallas has not changed that much, I think that the rhythm they were able to play last season was key on how that front three, which they haven't been able to use during the whole season together because of different reasons, Ariola, Velasco, and Ferreira, was key on them fighting for the league. They fight for the league, right? I don't get why. Like, minutes, lack of rotation, the heat of the summer, multiple reasons, but that for me is the biggest difference with last season Dallas and this Dallas.
Last season Dallas, they controlled games. That's what they like. It was positional play. You know, they have the Spaniard as a coach, and you know that positional play is huge in Spain with this generation of coaches, with good reason. I think it is a wonderful way to play. But they weren't able to turn that as consistently into penetration, into goals. And I think they've kind of dialed back on the positional play and control this year, in hopes for creating more. It hasn't worked to this point, though it has worked in the past couple of games in League's Cup play. I think maybe they're finding that happy balance. They are getting guys back. Sebastian Legette's back. Mm-hmm. Paxton Pomykal's back. I think Ariola's back.
He came off the bench.
So they do have more resources than they have at any point this year.
And a new D-mid coming in El Armendi.
And so if you want to control games through central midfield, having that guy there with the ball on his feet 100 times a game, like, that bodes well. Whatever happens in this game, I'm more bullish on FC Dallas than I was a month ago.
And that's an amazing signing. I know we're going to go to the transfer, but there was a point where we all thought that he was going to retire.
Yeah.
Because he was in the middle of an injury that he couldn't recover. And once he started playing again, he was the player that we knew again.
Yeah. So one more game kind of hit on before we get to the transfer stuff. LAFC for a few weeks off for the first time all season after the most congested first five months of MLS play in league history, MLS team in league history. A couple weeks did them pretty good. They played FC Juarez. They won 7-1. I know Juarez isn't the strongest League MX team, but all you can do is play against the team that's in front of you, and they put up a touchdown. Danny Buonga with a hat trick. Carlos Vela looked very good until he went out.
Yeah.
The non-contact.
As Jaime pointed out in the pre-show meeting, they're not as reliant on Vela as they were last year, or even, you know, obviously 3 years ago when he was amazing. LAFC looked really good.
Yep.
LAFC have made a lot of moves. So I do worry that they're not going to have the chemistry that they need.
They did this last year too, and then they won MLS Cup. Are you just talking about like the short term?
Like, I would say that they weren't as good a team at the end of last season as they were at the beginning of last season.
I think we agree in this one. I think that the first half of the season LAFC last year was a collective team, and the team that ended up winning the league was a team that depend a lot more of the individual quality of their players.
And
the final is a big example of
the final goal is the perfect example. The team on the other side of the field, we all like LAFC played great against Juarez. They weren't maybe 7-1 great, but they played great. Even if we're not as high on them as we have been in the past, they are still obviously a very, very good team and a threat to win this thing. RSL are playing like a dark horse threat to win this thing.
I wouldn't even say dark horse. I think that's disrespectful. I think that they should.
Well, definition, if you just beat the CCL winner, right? The by definition, the best team in the region, you beat them 3-1 after going down 1-0, right? And when they went 1-0 down, it was like, oh, here we go again. Yep. It's going to be just like that Monterrey game. X dog for days. From RSL.
Quality for days, dude.
You, Jaime, you compared them to Atletico Madrid when we were talking about it. Than just the 4-4-2, though it is partially the 4-4-2. It looks like a Diego Simeone team.
No, and they have like this fighting mentality. Like, it's a team that fights every single game. They have recovered that solid defense through the MLS season because they were really bad at the beginning
of the season.
They were terrible, and they have became a more compact game. And I think that you were talking about it with Minnesota, right? How they improve in attack, they need to take less risk with their fullbacks on attack. So the team is attacking better and defending better, right? And the confidence that a team gets when your forwards, the ones you signed, the ones you already had, start scoring, because you know that you can come back. When you are in when your team is not scoring, you go to the game, you concede one game, and you know, like, we're done, and you're absolutely out of the game. And this RSL now, it's having that momentum. Says, oh, we can come back. It doesn't matter if we start conceding a goal. We can come back. And that's what they proved us yesterday. Yeah. Because it was there was a point, like, Leon was very good at the beginning. And they couldn't even score the second one. And RSL stay in the game. Mm-hmm. They stay in the game. They stay alive until it was their moment.
And it's so much fun to watch that front four. It's two former LAFC guys in Danny Musovski. 9 goals, 5 assists in about 1,400 minutes this year. He's been excellent. And, of course, Chicho Arango, who now has 3 goals in about 400 minutes for RSL. Worth every penny, very obviously. But Jefferson Savarino on one side. And then the American teenager, Diego Luna, who I'm taking the L on this one. I thought he was never going to be a Pablo Mastroeni type player. I thought he was too much about having the ball and maybe not enough defensive work. This kid has bought in. He is adding value both on and off the ball. The end product still maybe isn't there enough to the point, but, like, he's brave, right? He is always trying to find spots and get on the ball. And I think that has allowed the forwards to be forwards. They don't have to always come back and help the midfield. And that this game is going to be fun. This game is going to be like low key, maybe the game of the round, other than maybe the other one in this bracket, which is Tigres for Mountain Right. We already covered that. Yeah. We should move on to the transfer. We have Tom here, so we got to do the transfer window stuff, right?
Yeah. One note, Tuesday night, 10:30 p.m. Eastern is that LAFC RSL game that we're all looking forward to. So yeah, we'll start with LAFC.
We'll start with LAFC.
Transition. So LAFC's window. They just never stop cooking. They don't have boring windows, even when the team's very good, just like last summer. This year, made a lot of changes. In came forward Mario Gonzalez. In came winger Christian Oliveira on a U22 initiative deal. And central midfielder Filip Krastev, a Bulgarian international. He's on loan, but there's a $7 million purchase option, his agent has told Bulgarian media. So if he does well and if he stays, that's got to be a DP.
I don't care about the last two guys. I don't care about whether they're good, they're bad, they play a single minute. I care about Mario Gonzalez.
Yeah.
Because this team, I think one of the ways they were worse in the spring than they were in last autumn and winter was because they didn't have a true number nine. Yeah. And Gonzalez is, by all accounts, a true number nine.
Yeah. And the players that they lost, Jose Cifuentes, who that's been a long time coming for him to go to Rangers, and they traded Mahalo Opoku to CF Montreal for $1.75 million in allocation money. So yeah, Gonzalez comes in. He is the Chicho Arango replacement that they didn't have earlier the first half of the season. And I will say, a lot, like, he had 15 goals in 1,800 minutes last year in Belgium. The transfer fee was around $3 million. He's in his prime. All of these details were what we said about Chicho Arango when they signed him, when, like, we didn't know exactly who he was when he came from Millonarios. And again, so there's a lot of pedigree and profile stuff that reminds you of Chicho Arango. And again, like, I'm going to get made fun of what we've all been saying, I think, all year, is they should have found a way to keep Chicho Arango, give him a new contract, keep him happy. But again, if this player comes in like Arango did on a non-DP deal, this takes him up another level.
Yeah, Garth Lagerwey, a couple years ago, when he was asked about his philosophy for signing players, said basically aim for guys who are 26, 27, 28 years old, who are in their prime and who have been successful in multiple leagues. Mm-hmm. And Mario Gonzalez is 27 years old. He has been successful in multiple leagues. He is playing in a team that needs I will be very surprised if this one does not work out for LAFC. They had a great window. I think they're a better team at the end of this window than they were at the start.
I want to ask you, Tom, for example, Gareth Bale coming to LAFC last season, right? Now, when we make the context of who they signed and how they signed, like, Bale was the exception of the rule.
Yes.
Like, that was an opportunity that they couldn't let go, and it paid the price. But this type of Mario Gonzalez, Denis Bouanga, that's where they are going to spend the money, and that's why this team is so successful.
And that's the sweet spot that they've really been hitting. Like, that's what's, again, getting Carlos Vela right from day one has been, a driving force behind what they've done. But these signings, like Mario Gonzalez, or even when they had Diego Rossi as a young DP, that wasn't a slam dunk signing. Like,
right.
They're scouting. Again, every team gets signings wrong, But I think that they've done enough to earn the benefit of the doubt on the signing of Mariano Gonzalez.
Yeah, no, for sure, for sure. And is there a path on where do players come from that are successful in MLS?
I mean, so for me, and I try not to be binary about anything anyway, that like there are proven pathways. That's why MLS clubs go to South America. That's why they go Ecuador, Colombia, and like Argentina and stuff. But like the difference between MLS and say Manchester City is Manchester City, Bayern Munich, they're looking for a new forward this summer. It's Harry Kane or who else?
Like,
or
do you have $300 million to call up De Laurentiis at Napoli and maybe then you could get a deal for Osimhen?
But even taking away the finances, how many players make Bayern Munich's first 11 better?
Yeah, it's not like a lot.
20? 30? Yeah. Same thing with Manchester City. In MLS, the quality isn't the absolute top 1% of this sport. You could find quality players, and teams have found quality players all over the world and all in different circumstances. So for me, there isn't like a, yeah, we need to sign a 20-year-old from Argentina or a 30-year-old from Spain. Like every different player can be successful in the right system identified for the right qualities, and that they like that's probably that's among my most favorite things about this league is that there are so many different ways to be successful. It's not just we need to spend $100 million on a center forward and there's three players that we can sign.
Yeah, no, I'm absolutely with you. And the other thing that I think there is like a little pattern, and tell me if I'm wrong, it's, and probably it's Bella and Martinez who opened that path. And it's what Mario Gonzalez is now. It's like late 20s playing in Europe.
Yeah.
I think those two guys, I mean, Ladero was a big one.
Yeah.
Diego Valeri when he came. You know, Javier Morales, if you want to go back 15 years. Like all
Cucho.
Yeah.
Cucho Hernandez
last year. He's a little younger. Yeah. Obviously has been worth every penny, which is a good segue. Yeah. We could segue to the crew.
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah. So look, I do want to say off the top before we get yelled at correctly by Cincy and RSL fans, we're not going to dive deep into their windows here because they did a lot of their work early. And I think we've talked a lot about Pupenza and everything good that Cincy did and just adding to the Shield leading team. I've talked a ton about
RSL. Yell at you, Tom.
That's fine. But I want to make sure that I've got that out. Columbus Crew, this was the most interesting window for me. They were extremely busy. It was a tightrope, high wire act. At the end, when the dust settles, they brought in Diego Rossi, Julian Gressel, Rudy Camacho, Yevhen Jaberko. Out went Lucas Zelarayán, Milos Deganek, and Eloy Room. Zelarayán was their best player. I thought that he was better than Cucho this year. I mean, you disagree, but fair enough. Like, if you told me a week ago, 2 weeks ago, rather, that they were going to lose Zelarayán, what would the scenario have to be for you to not feel any worse about them in the short or long term? Because this is a very difficult player to replace. And they got the top of a very short list of realistic signings by bringing in Diego Rossi.
I had Columbus as my favorite on winning the league.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the season. I will tell it if you invite me more often. Something that's not happening.
Blame on
this season. I still think they are the favorites on winning the league. And they have, from what I thought last season, was the best manager of the league. I think the best manager of the league last season was Wilfried Nancy.
You got my vote for coach of the year as well.
You bring them to manage the team that won the MLS Next Pro. Like the bench of Columbus is the MLS Next Pro 2022 champion. And then you have all these players that won the league not more than 2 years ago together.
Right.
And he started moving them around. So that's why I think it was a favorite. Zelarayán, it's very difficult to replace. Yes. Rossi is a great replacement. Absolutely. Why I think it's not going to be that hard for them to replace him? Because how Nancy plays was not taking out the best version of Zelarayán. Because he does not play with an actual number 10. He plays with two 10s behind a striker. That is Ramírez. So even though he was getting a lot of out of Zelarayán, it was not the best system for him. And it's the best system for Rossi. Or now it's Rossi. We know it's Rossi, right? But when we heard the news, it's like, okay, somebody in that kind of Cucho second line role is going to come. So I think that they're still looking very good. If you add that they brought Camacho,
yes,
who was Nancy's core on how that Montreal team builds from the back, something that Deganek could not do. It's a different type of player. So I think that they're looking very good. Just one correction. Their best player is Darlington Nagbe.
I do not agree with that, but I understand why a lot of people, like, he is a phenomenal keystone for them, because if they run out of ideas, and anytime your team that is going to play with the ball, and Nantes teams are always going to play with the ball, you are going to have moments where you run out of ideas and you can just give the ball to Nagbe and he's not going to do anything progressive with it, but he will recycle possession and you get to start it all over again.
Yeah. Yeah. And going to, again, the big moves at the end of the window was a couple days before the window closed, and then deadline day, they officially signed Diego Rossi. So I kind of want this to be the definitive explanation of the Zelarayán Rossi and what the Columbus Crew did, because there have been some things out there that suggested
people lying on social media.
No, that was LAFC with Junior.
With what?
So
there was an insane LAFC Twitter fan who kept calling Tom a liar because he said they were going to sign. This guy kept insisting that LAFC were going to sign Chucky Lozano this window, and Tom was like, "They're not signing Chucky Lozano."
So anyway, I want this to be definitive because there have been, I guess, different thoughts and different, I guess, even slightly reported on what happened for Columbus to sign Rossi and transfer out Lucas Arrayán. I'm sure in a vacuum, they would have liked to keep both. Why wouldn't you want to have kept both? But that wasn't ever a realistic option because they have three DPs, none of which can be bought down, and you cannot sign Diego Rossi at 25 years old without a DP spot. Like, I don't know what his contract came out to. I'm sure just his contract alone would make him a DP, but even if not, it's a $5.5 million transfer. There was no way to bring him in without a DP spot.
Even if you do the Chelsea thing of amortizing it over a 9-year deal.
Yeah, you would have to sign a deal until he's 42 for that to be paused. But even at that, I'm sure his contract, his yearly annual salary would have been more than that. So anyway, what happened here is that the Crew have been big fans of Rossi for a while. They've had him on their discovery list for a while. This is a player that they've targeted and wanted to bring in. Interest started coming from Saudi Arabia for Lucas Zelarayán. They discussed it. He discussed it with the club. The Crew wouldn't have let Zelarayán go midseason if they weren't able to get the Diego Rossi deal done. But the Diego Rossi deal, to be able to get done, they needed to know that they would have a DP spot open, i.e. Zelarayán going to Saudi Arabia. So it was two deals that were being done parallel. It wasn't like they signed Rossi, brought it to the league, and they said no, because Darlington Nagbe is making $1.8 million this year. For a DP to be able to be bought down, he has to be at 1.65 or lower. So there was no way for that to happen. And there was, like, I don't think that there's anything so unrealistic about it. So, sorry, and just to kind of wrap that up, they did these two deals parallel, and when they were in a spot that they felt extraordinarily confident that the Diego Rossi deal was going to be done before the deadline, that's when everything was done with Zelarayán. Things were agreed. If Rossi said at the 11th hour, you know what, I want to stay in Europe, or you know what, I am not ready for this, the Zelarayán deal doesn't happen. They would say, sorry, we have to wait for the winter because we can't lose him. The Columbus Crew were not going to exit this window with losing Zelarayán without signing Rossi.
Oh, okay. No, I was going to ask you, were there a couple of minutes where they own none of them?
I mean, technically, but like, again, when I was reporting out the Zelarayán deal, they didn't, I had to work hard to find out that it was Rossi that was coming in, but it was the kind of lines that were coming back to me. It's like, look, we wouldn't have done this if we weren't overwhelmingly confident that we have a very good replacement lined up.
So technically, there were a couple of hours where they own none of them, but
correct,
it was not likely.
No, yeah, again,
to go bad.
If it was like a 50-50, they would have kept waiting. But so another reason why they announced the deal and like went through the deal is that they wanted to treat Zelarayán like a club legend. Like the feelings between player and club are very, very strong. The Crew were playing, was that Monday night, Doyle, Tuesday night? What days all blend together. Yeah. So that's when they announced the deal. They wanted him to have this little send-off. Hey, like, go to the game tonight. We'll announce it. You can have like a lap of honor, whatever, with the fans, all this. I thought that was really cool. So that was part of the reason why they announced it then. And again, they, as of Tuesday late afternoon, early evening, felt strongly enough that the Rossi deal was a matter of time, that's what they did.
You know, and what happened in that game, it's a statement going forward, right? Because what you just explained is all the paperwork behind and the transfer, right? I explained why I think Wilfred Nancy was not taking the best out of him and that Rossi probably would suit that part. But then you have the squad, right? That it was preparing to face probably the strongest team they have faced the whole season. And even though they can't receive this explanation, if I'm playing next to Sorarayan and I know that the guys, it's an asset with the ball, how I'm mentally going into the game knowing that our best player, our captain, is leaving, right? In the middle of a season, we're running for the title. And how the team react was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
It was pretty impressive because all what we're explaining, Tom, it's theory. Mm-hmm. It's no emotion, right?
Exactly.
And how the team react to those news and gave the performance they gave was pretty impressive.
Doyle, wrap us up with Columbus. Again, we spent a lot of time on Rossi, but again, they brought in Julian Gressel, Rudy Camacho, Yevhen Chabarka as well. Tell me what you think.
Gressel, I think, is the best right wing back in the league and has been for a long time.
I agree. He's
playing inside for Vancouver, and that just speaks to his flexibility. I think he, in part, you make up for some of the playmaking that you lose with Zellerayan. You make it up in the aggregate, to quote from Moneyball. But I think they're a better team. Rossi, I do wonder if he's going to kind of play as a second forward in this one because he's not a playmaker, right? Like, he's a guy whose value is in his ability to receive the ball off of movement in the box and score goals. And I think that he will do that for them. I feel like, in terms of Jaime's point of, like, this is a team that is going to win something. Obviously, it's not going to be Leagues Cup, and so it's, you know, probably MLS Cup or bust if they're going to have a trophy this year. It's going to come down to Camacho and Terebko. It's going to come down to those guys. Are they able to help the defense improve to the point where they can go out and throw a 1-0 game when they need to? But it's set up for us to all be talking about the Columbus Crew ahead of the 2024 season. This team's going to be really good.
It's second season in a row that Gressel is transferred mid-season, right?
Yeah. And
DC, Vancouver.
Yeah.
And the irony is, like, with DC playing a 3-5-2, there would be in Benteke. Yeah. There would, like, Benteke would have 15 goals instead of 8 if Gressel was still
there. Prior to Rooney.
Rooney
as soon as Rooney got there, because Rooney wanted to play a 4-3-3.
Yeah. And then change it. A couple more teams here to dive into. LA Galaxy, we thought were very interesting.
They're interesting, but, like, they're not going to make the playoffs. These moves were considering the sanctions that they were facing, I thought they did as well as they could to get Diego Fagundes and Mikey Barrios, who are, quality, useful MLS wingers, not world beaters. Edwin Cerrillo, he's a good addition. As a defensive midfielder.
Guest on Rubin got hurt and they did not have anybody on the roster.
So
I think that was a really important thing.
It was, but, like, in Maya Yoshida, he's a veteran center back that they got. He was out of contract, replaces Caceres.
Yeah.
It's not going to be enough. The Galaxy are headed toward a winter rebuild.
Yes.
Chicharito's out of contract. Yep. Douglas Costa's going to be out of contract. Ricky Puig, I wish he would stay in MLS forever because I love watching him play, but he's on Instagram or Twitter liking posts that say he's going back to Europe this offseason. So these moves, they're nice. They're not going
to
prevent that.
Were things that happened to Galaxy's region conference semifinal last season?
Yeah, I mean, you might be right.
Yeah, because it looks like a team.
It was
that
a false positive.
Yeah, it was a false positive, and actually they were extremely overachieving by reaching that spot.
Yeah.
So, what should have been a rebuild season, this one, was postponed for the next one.
Yeah, but they have a better front office in place now than they have at any point in the past 9 years. So, I think that is the silver lining for LA Galaxy's fans is, like, you're probably going to have a better, more sensible approach to putting a roster together than we have seen from this team in quite some time.
Yeah, we'll see. I do want to reiterate, though, that I really like the Fagundes trade and the Yoshida signing. And again, doing all of this with sanctions, they could only acquire players from within the country, so more or less trades and free agents. And then after the window closed, when those sanctions end, all MLS teams are able to sign free agents until September 13th. And the Galaxy brought in Maya Yoshida, and I thought that was a good sign. No, you're shrugging.
No, I mean, it's good work, but I don't think there's a path to the playoffs for this team.
Fair enough. Another team, Vancouver Whitecaps, they did a lot of deadline day work, bringing in Canadian international fullbacks Richie Larea on loan from Nottingham Forest and Sam Adekugbe from Hayat Espoir. I think I probably butchered that.
I don't know how to say it.
From Turkey. the Turkish club. And again, as we talked about, they traded Julian Gressel, and part of that was because they offered him a very strong new contract, but he wanted to be back east with his family, and he wanted to tell the club early enough so they could decide to trade him if they decided to, and that's what they did, and now they're bringing Richie Leroy and Sam Adekugbe for the future, and again, I think that signals a firm return to three at the back playing with wingbacks when you spend this much money on two wingbacks.
I think you're probably right, but we know Vanni Sartini likes to change things up. Look, if you're going to lose Julian Gressel, Richie Leroy is about as well as you can do in terms of finding a replacement. We know he's going to add value going forward in kind of a different way than Gressel does. Mm. So it's a different look. He has value as a leader as well. And Adekugbe, just a solid player. You know, he's not going to be as dynamic on that left side as Larea is on the right, but that's fine. And I don't think the Whitecaps are going to go away. I think this team is going to be a factor the rest of the season. I don't think they're a title winning team, but stranger things have happened.
They're a playoff team.
Yeah.
No more on that. But two things on those signings. First, I believe that they don't have a left-footed center back. And Adekugbe can be.
Yeah.
Left back in back three. Mm-hmm. Full back in back four. Winger in back three. Like, he can play in those three positions as he does in the
It's a good point. Like, if they play with three at the back, right, you could have Adekugbe as a left center back with a little bit more license to go forward.
Yeah.
Almost like we've seen, you know, Andy Nahar do in the past. Or the, and then you stay with Luis Martins as the left wing back, and he's generally been good except for in penalty shootouts where he should never take one again.
Another team that had a very busy summer, NYCFC. They did the thing where they just kind of dump in a bunch of signings that come out of nowhere with this City Football Group. They brought in Mustafa Bakrar, Burke Risa, center back, center forward is Bakrar, Andres Pereira on loan from the Philadelphia Union, a highly rated young winger Julian Fernandez from Vélez Sarsfield, and Costa Rican forward Alonso Martinez. They're also rumored to be bringing back Maxi Morales, but that hasn't been announced yet, so maybe by the time...
I like what we've seen from Bakrar in his couple of games. Yeah. He wasn't great against the Red Bulls.
Just having a center forward, tough.
Exactly, and like, look... They kind of hung Nick Cushing out to dry by waiting this long to make these moves. They're in a tough spot. They have the chance to make the playoffs though because of this.
This is a contradictory statement, but from the teams that are not performing, is the one that plays it better.
I agree. Like, this team, they play good soccer. They do not turn it into goals, and they haven't really since Tate Castellanos left. And the hope is that Bakrar can fill some of that. Yeah. If he's 75% of the player that Castellanos was.
And obviously, the focus is in Castellanos. That's like the big name. But they miss Sean Johnson, man.
Yeah, they do.
Nothing to criticize the two keepers. But Sean Johnson was national team.
I think Sean Johnson misses them too, basically. Yeah.
Our last team, we should mention Inter Miami. You know about Messi, you know about Busquets, you know about Jordi Alba, who made his debut in the last game. Tom, talk to us about the three young South American kids that they brought in. Well, let's start with Gomez, the central midfielder, because we saw him make his debut against... Orlando City, running around with like a chicken with his head cut off. Couple of rough touches, couple of rough tackles.
When Messi scored the second goal and he goes and hug him and he's just stopped, like, he's like, is this real? Do you see that? Like, he was like, am I allowed to? Like, I don't know. Like, he didn't know what to do. That was like so sweet. Yeah. That's a word. That was sweet.
Gomez reminds me, I've only seen, you know, the 15 minutes that he got against Orlando, or maybe it was
highlight reels.
And the highlight reels, he reminds me of Yanel Herrera, right? Nice. He's a go everywhere, number eight. You're not going to tether him to one part of the field. He's a bodyguard. Mm-hmm. And if you think about how Messi plays now, how Argentina won the World Cup trophy, Rodrigo De Paul was Messi's bodyguard everywhere he went on the field during that tournament. I suspect that's what Gomez is going to be.
And it gives them another... So again, Gregory was their best player pre-Messi, and he's going to be back from injury soon. John Mata was a key starter. He's going to be back from injury maybe in September.
Kramaski has been better the past couple of games, and he's another one who will run all day long.
These are the types of players that they need. And the overarching thing, that this is why the U22 initiative is here. They went out and spent about $15 million on three highly rated U22 South American youth internationals. Tomas Avilas was like $7 million up front, center back, 19-year-old from Racing Club. That's a spot that they really need. And normally, and I'll still say, oh, you still give him a little bit of time to adapt, because young players, particularly young center backs, takes a little bit to adapt. They're spending $7 million on this kid. They probably expect him to be playing right away. And like, I don't know, has an MLS team ever spent anywhere near $7 million on a center back? Like,
I can't remember.
I don't even think anywhere close. So that's a huge signing. Facundo Farias, he's a left winger. I thought that he was going to start, but Robert Taylor shown it on Angel Di Maria, so maybe he won't start. Yeah. But again, this, when you have these three DPs, when all the money that's going to be wrapped up in some of these players, the U22 initiative is so key to add high quality depth, youthful energy, and like, again, with this team, energy is very important. So I thought that this,
and if you
really,
do the
really
job of developing them right, it adds to your coffers later on, because you develop and sell. There have been people saying, like, how has Miami are still under sanctions. This is their final year under sanctions, but how have they been able to put this together? There are three things to understand. One is their cap is clean. If you look at the job Chris Henderson has done in terms of cutting, you know, some not great contracts, and then making sure the only players you're spending allocation money on are the likes of Gregory and Jean Mota,
and
DeAndre Yedlin, like guys who are clear starting caliber, like plus players in this league. They have a very clean cap. Two is the Bryce Duke trade.
Yep.
You know, trading him for Kamal Miller, who's on a good number, and getting a bunch of allocation cash back. That was huge from giving Miami the flexibility they need. And three, you were talking about the U22 initiative guys. They hit the cap at $150,000 each. Mm-hmm. That's why I think the better teams are going out there and figuring out a way, okay, we need two high-end DPs who you can't buy down, and then either a young DP or a guy at, you know, $1.6 million or below. Who, because if you have a third DP at that level, I know it's convoluted and it's very tough to keep, but if you have a third DP at that level, that opens up all three U22 initiative slots to use. And then, oh, by the way, they're getting use out of their homegrown kids as well. Kramaski, Noah Allen, Ruiz, Frey before he got hurt. So it's a really well put together roster. It shows the value of having a GM and Chris Henderson, who really understands the roster rules, cap space, how to manage all of it. And Miami, boy, they look like one of the favorites, one of the deeper teams in the league suddenly, and certainly a lot of fun to watch. We're going to wrap the show. Any final thoughts from you boys?
Do you think Busquets is going to have defensive responsibilities on the team? Because he was talking about the bodyguard.
Yeah.
And I think that the bodyguards are for Busquets.
I think, Dixon Arroyo, another one. Like, those two number eights in front of Busquets and really behind Messi, they're defending for four.
And when
Yedlin goes back, watch the defensive rotations. Arroyo has been so smart and so good, because as soon as Yedlin pushes forward, Arroyo's dropping back and covering that space, and he has not put a foot wrong in the past few games.
Because it's a team that it's four at the back, but tactically there are three at the back,
right?
Because it's always Yedlin at the same line, in the same line than Taylor. And one is a winger and the other one is a fullback. Yeah.
I thought you were going to say it's naturally because Ecuadorians are so smart.
A statement. Like, I don't have to say it. I don't have to say it.
All right, guys. This has been a lot of fun. Tom is letting me wrap the show.
You're welcome.
Jaime, thank you for joining us. We are going to have you back. Maybe we'll tell Weeby to stay on the beach and you can join us. Tom, always a pleasure to talk with you, my guy. Maria, Thomas, Anders, a cast of thousands in the back room. Appreciate you guys guiding us through this. We'll be back on Wednesday. Next show is Wednesday. The next three nights, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, there is Leagues Cup action, which you could watch all of on MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. And, of course, go to leaguescup.com. It's been a pleasure. We'll see you guys in a few days.